curious. Once upon a time, Mergen said that name meant deathless. Although more recently, I had been given the meaning steadfast guardian. But I had been provided with whole new sets of creation myths and whatnot, too. I fought off an urge to charge off and plunge down the stairway right then. I hustled back to talk it over with the others. Most of the crowd were preoccupied with an effort to get Shvetya's throne turned right side up, by the power of talking about it. Suvrin told me,
"It's a way to keep warm."
And a way to work off some tension, no doubt. I heard plenty of traditional-style grumbling, questioning the intelligence of any leader who wanted to play around with something like that great ugly thing over there on that throne. I gathered everyone interested. "Swan knows the way down to the caverns. His memory is getting better all the time." Goblin and One Eye preened. I gave them no chance to congratulate themselves publicly. "I'm going down there to scout. I want the rest of you to get camp set up. I want you to work out specifically how we'll divide up tomorrow so the majority can scoot on across the plain to safety." We had discussed this time and again, how we could break up the party, leaving the minimum number of people with the maximum stores to bring out the captured while the rest moved on to, it was hoped, a more congenial climb. Doge's position, so perfectly rational, was that we should ignore the captured until we had crossed the plain and gotten ourselves established in the land of unknown shadows and were capable of mounting a more thoroughly prepared and supplied expedition. But none of us knew what we would face at that end of this passage, and way too many of us were emotionally incapable of walking away from our brothers again now that we were this close. I should have gotten more information out of Mergen while we still had some flexibility. Time was winnowing our options rapidly. Sara's response to Uncle's repeating his suggestion was blistering enough to melt lead. She might be reluctant to have her husband back, but she was not going to delay any crisis. Swan leaned over my shoulder and whispered, "If you hang around here waiting for all these people to agree on something, we're going to get very old and very hungry before anything happens." The man had a point. A definite point. Chapter 83. I got my daily constitutional in before we reached the stairway. I began to appreciate just how vast the hall at the heart of that fortress was. My party dwindled into the distance. I observed, "This thing has got to be a mile across."
"Almost exactly. It's a few yards under, according to Soulcatcher. I don't know why. I wish we had a torch. I saw patterns in the flooring last time I was here, when there wasn't quite so much dust, but she wouldn't let me waste time looking at them."
There was a lot of dust. There had been none outside. The plain tolerated nothing alien except the corpses of invaders, evidently. Even here, we had yet to discover any sign of the animals or equipment that had accompanied the captured south.
"How much farther?"
"Almost there. Watch for a drop-off."
"A drop-off?"
"A step down. It's only about 18 inches, but you could break a leg if it surprises you. I turned an ankle last time."
We found the drop-off. I stopped to look back once I stepped down. All sorts of genius was being invested in the assignments I had given. Closer, Sara and the Radisha and several others to whom I had not given specific assignments had decided to follow me. I said, "You're right. It does look like there's some kind of inlays. If we have time, maybe we can take a closer look." I considered the edge of the stone. "This curves, and it's polished."
"That part of the floor is a circle, and it's almost exactly 1/80th of the diameter of the plane, according to Soulcatcher. The raised part where the demon's throne used to sit is 1/80th the size of this."
"That's probably got to mean something. It have anything to do with the captured?"
"Not that I'm aware of."
"Then we'll worry about it later."
"The stairs start over here.
They did indeed, right next to the wall. The crack in the floor had extended clear through that. The wall's partial collapse had filled the gap there. Then the material from the wall had been pushed back up as the fissure healed itself. The stairs simply started. There was a rectangular hole in the floor. Steps went down, roughly paralleling the outer wall, away from the crack in the floor, which had healed almost completely. There was no handrail. 20 steps down, we reached a landing 8 feet by 8. The descending steps led off from our right. This flight appeared to go downward forever. Faint light crept up it, just strong enough so you could see where to put your feet. Sara and the Radisha had caught up close enough that I could hear them talking without being able to pick up specific words. Both women sounded frightened by the immediate future. I could sympathize. I was nervous about achieving my life's ambition myself. Just a little.
"You want to go first?"
Swan asked. He lacked considerable enthusiasm, I thought. "Are there booby traps or something?"
"No. She probably wanted to. Just in case somebody passed this way someday, just for the sheer mean fun of it. But there wasn't enough time. She piddled around so much, for so long. I didn't really believe we'd ever get away. I'm sure we wouldn't have if she hadn't been who she was. She spun spells that chased the shadows away. She'd been in there before. And she'd practiced."
"There it is."
"What?"
"Nothing. Just remembering something." Stupid me. All those years I wondered how Swan and Soulcatcher had found time to bury the captured without getting gobbled up by shadows. And I had overlooked the obvious. The fact that Soulcatcher was a major sorceress and already had some experience manipulating shadows. You can be screamingly blind to the obvious if you don't realize that you have not opened up all the doors of your mind. "Forgive me, O Lord of the Hours. Be merciful. Be compassionate. I shall close the borders of my soul as soon as my brothers are free." At this point, Swan had no incentive to steer me into danger. I started downstairs. The architects, engineers, and stonemasons responsible had not been determined to achieve geometric perfection. Though this portion of the stairwell continued downward in a specific general direction, it tended to meander from side to side of a straight line. Nor were the steps of a uniform height. The builders had been thoughtful enough to provide landings every little way, though. I had a feeling those would seem to be miles apart once I started climbing up again. "If we have to bring One Eye down here, we're going to have to carry him back up. He won't survive the climb otherwise."
"You might want to organize what you're going to do before we go down there, then."
"I can't decide what has to be done until I see what I'm dealing with."
"You might call up your genie in a bottle. Get him to tell you."
"He's never said much about the place where he's at. Not since he's been in there himself. It's like he's constrained against that. I've dreamed about it a few times, but I don't know how accurate my dreams were." Swan groaned.
"I really didn't want to make this trek."
"Will it be that bad?"
"Not going down, but heading the other way is likely to change your attitude."
"I don't know. I'm beginning to get a little winded just going in this direction."
"Then slow down. A few minutes isn't going to make a difference. Not after all these years."
He was right. And wrong. There was no rush for the captured, but for us, with our limited resources, time was destined to become critical. Swan continued,
"You need to slow down, Sleepy. Really. It's going to get a little bit hairy in a minute."
He was absolutely right. But he understated the case dramatically. The stairwell did a meander to the right. It caught up with the chasm caused by the earthquakes that had occurred during the reign of the Shadow Masters. There was only half a stairway there. It clung to the face of a cliff. That left a whole lot of down on my right-hand side. And it was down that was entirely too well illuminated by a reddish-orange light that may have come from the stone itself, since there seemed to be no other obvious source. Though I did have trouble opening my eyes wide enough to look. Wraith-like wisps of vapor wobbled upward from somewhere down below. The air seemed warmer. I asked, "We're not heading into hell itself, are we?" Some Vedna believe Al-Sheel is a place where wicked souls will burn for all eternity. Swan understood.
"Not your hell. But I'd guess it's hell enough for them that are trapped down there."
I stopped on the remains of a landing. The steps narrowed to 2 feet just below me. By leaning out slightly, I could see clearly that the stairwell had been constructed inside a larger bore at least 20 feet in diameter. The shaft had been filled with a stone darker than that through which it had been cut. Maybe the bore had needed to be that big so Kina could be dragged down below. I asked, "Can you imagine what an engineering project this must have been?
People with plenty of slaves aren't daunted by big projects. What's the matter?"
"I have a problem with heights. This next part is going to take a lot of prayer and some outside encouragement. I want you to go first. I want you to go slow, and I want you to stay where I can touch you." I believe in meeting my fears eyeball to eyeball, but if it gets bad and I feel like I might freeze up, I want to be able to close my eyes and keep going. I was astounded by how calm and reasonable my voice sounded.
"I understand. The real problem, then, is, who's going to keep his eyes open for me?" "Whoa! Don't panic, Sleepy. I was joking. I can handle it. Really."
It was not the worst thing I ever dealt with. I never abandoned rational thought. But it was difficult. Even when Swan promised me that an unseen protective barrier existed on the abyssal side and demonstrated its presence, the animal inside me wanted to get the heck out of there and go someplace where the ground was flat and green. There was a sky overhead, and there might even be a few trees. Swan assured me that I was missing one heck of a view, especially as we approached the lower end of the gap, where the light was brighter, revealing churning mists way below, mists that concealed the depths of the abyss. I kept my eyes closed until we were back into a closed cavern again. I had started counting steps up top so I could get an idea of how deep we went, but I lost count while I was pretending to be a fly crawling on a wall. I was too busy being terrified, but it did seem like we had traveled a long way horizontally as well as downward. Almost immediately after I had that thought, the stair turned left, then left again. The orange-red light faded away. The stair made a couple more quick turns into a total darkness, which aroused whole new species of terrors. But nothing bit me, and nothing came to steal my soul. Then there was light again, growing so subtly I was never really aware of first noticing it. It had a golden cast to it, but was extremely cold. And as soon as I was aware of it, I knew we were approaching our destination. The stairwell passed right through a natural cavern. At one time, that had been sealed off, but the quakes had toppled the responsible masonry walls. I asked, "We here?"
"Almost. Careful climbing over the stones. They aren't very stable."
"What's that?"
"What?"
"That sound." We listened. After a while, Swan said,
"I think it's wind. Sometimes there was a breeze when we were down here before."
"Wind? A mile underground?"
"Don't ask me to explain it. It just is. You want to go first this time?"
"Yes."
"I thought you would."
Chapter 84. Golden caverns where old men sat beside the way, frozen in time, immortal but unable to move an eyelid. madmen they. Some covered with fairy webs of ice, as though 1,000 winter spiders had spun threads of frozen water. Above, an enchanted forest of icicles grew downward from the cavern roof. So Mergen described it once upon a time, decades ago. The description remained apt, though the light was not as golden as I expected, and the delicate filigrees of ice were denser and more complex. The old men seated against the walls, caught up in the webs, were not the wide-eyed men of Mergen's visions, though. They were dead, or asleep. I did not see one open eye, nor did I see one face I recognized. Willow, who are these people? The bitter wind continued to rush through the cavern, which was 12 feet high and nearly as wide, with a relatively flat floor, side to side. It sloped with the length of the cavern. It looked like ancient, frozen mud covered with a pelt of fine frost fur. Water had run through the cavern in some epoch before the coming of men.
These ones? I don't know. They were here when we came down.
I leaned closer, but was careful not to touch. These caves are natural.
They have that look.
Then they've been down here all along. They were here before the plain was built.
Possibly. Probably.
And whoever buried Kena knew about them. So did the deceivers chased here by Radranak.
Huh.
This one is definitely deceased. Naturally mummified, but definitely gone. The corpse was all dried out. Bare bones showed at a folded knee and tattered elbow.
These others? Who knows?
Maybe the right sorcery could get them up and running around like Iqbal's kids.
Why would we get them up? We're here to get the guys that me and Ketcher buried, right? They're on up there.
He pointed upslope, where the light was even less golden, becoming almost an icy blue. The light was not bright, not nearly so much so as in the vision I had experienced. Maybe it was more a psychic witch light than a physical one, more suited to the dreamwalker's eye. I mused. They might be able to tell us something interesting.
I'll tell you something interesting,
Swan muttered to himself. In a normal voice, for my benefit, he said.
I don't think so. At least I don't think it would be anything any of us would want to hear. Ketcher took extreme pains to avoid even touching them. Getting the captives passed without disturbing them was the hardest work we did.
I bent to examine another of the old men. He did not look like he belonged to any race I knew. They must be from one of the other worlds.
Maybe. There's a saying where I grew up. Let sleeping dogs lie. Sounds like exquisitely appropriate advice. We don't know why they were put down here.
I have no intention of releasing any deviltry but our own. These men here aren't the same as those.
There were several different groups last time. I doubt that that's changed. I got the feeling that they were dumped here at different times. See how much less ice there is around these guys? Makes me think it takes centuries to accumulate.
Ow!
What?
I banged my head on this damned rock icicle thing.
I must have overlooked it somehow.
Get smart and I'll punch you in the kneecap, Lofty. Does it feel like it's colder in there than it ought to be? It was not my imagination. And not the icy wind, either.
Always.
His grin had gone away.
It's them, I think. Starting to realize somebody's here. It keeps building up. It can get on your nerves if you pay any attention to it.
I could feel the growth of whatever it was. Insanity becoming palpable, I suppose. That was the impression, anyway. How come we're able to move around in here? I asked. Why aren't we frozen?
We'd probably end up that way if we stayed long enough to fall asleep. These people all had to be unconscious when they were brought down here.
Really? We were up where there was less ice. The frost on the floor still betrayed the tracks left by Soulcatcher and Willow Swan years ago. The old men here were different. They resembled Nguyen Bo, except for one, who had been tall, thin, and extremely pale.
But they don't stay asleep?
Several pairs of open eyes seemed to track me. I hoped it was my imagination, stimulated by the spookiness of the cave. I never actually saw any movement.
Footsteps.
I jumped hip-high to a short elephant before I realized that it had to be Sara and the Radisha, and whoever else had decided not to participate in all those exciting projects that were underway upstairs.
Go keep those people from stomping in here and messing everything up. I'll get an idea of the layout and try to figure out what we'll have to do.
Swan scowled and growled and grunted, then minced carefully back down the slight slope toward the stairwell. He talked to himself all the way. And I did not blame him. Even I thought nothing ever went right for him. I took a step in the direction the old footprints led. My boots went out from under me. I hit hard, then slid downhill until I caught up with Swan, who did a convincing job of acting amused after he stopped me.
You all right?
Bruised my side. Hurt my wrist.
I should have told you. That floor can be pretty slippery, where there's a lot of frost.
You're lucky I don't swear.
You
forgot on purpose. You're as bad as One-Eye or Goblin.
Did I just hear my name taken in vain?
One-Eye's voice, punctuated by rasping panting more suitable to a lunger, came from the shadows down where the stair intercepted the cavern. God is great. God is good. God is the all-knowing and all-merciful. His plan is hidden but just. And save me from the mystery of his plan, because all I ever get is the misery of his plan.
What is he doing down here? I asked Swan.
I know. I'll leave him behind.
I know I'm definitely not going to carry him up out of here just so he doesn't suffer another stroke from the effort. Hit him over the head when he isn't looking.
I began moving deeper into the cave again. I'm going to try this one more time. Beneath my breath, I continued my conversation with God. As usual, he did not trouble himself to defend his works to me. My fault for being a woman. I nearly missed the transition from the ancient Nguyen Bo types to company men, because the first few modern bodies belonged to Nguyen Bo bodyguards. I halted only when I reached and recognized a Nguyen Bo bodyguard named Pham Quang. I studied him for a moment. I backed up carefully. When you looked for it, the boundary was evident. My brothers and their allies had several centuries less frost accumulation upon them. They had only just begun to develop the delicate webbings that encased the older bodies. That seemed awfully fast, actually, considering how long some of the others must have been buried. Possibly Soulcatcher had indulged in a little artistry during her visit. Interspersed with my brothers were several bodies so ancient that they had become completely cocooned. I intuited them as bodies only because the chrysalises slumped just like the captured did. I thought, it might be worthwhile having One-Eye along after all. Down here, Soulcatcher might have taken time to set a trap or two, just for the devil of it. The Nar generals Isi and Okiba sat against the cave wall opposite Pham Quang. Okiba's eyes were open. They did not move, but did seem fixed on me. I hunkered down, got as close as I could without touching him. Those brown pools were moist. There was no dust on their surfaces, nor any frost. They had opened quite recently. A chill crawled down my spine. A very creepy feeling came over me. I felt like I was walking among the dead. In the far north, whence Swan came carrying travelers' tales, some religions supposedly pictured hell as a cold place. My imagination, running with the terror that my brother's situation sparked, had no trouble picturing this cave as a suburb of hell. I rose carefully and moved away from Okiba. Now the cave floor was almost perfectly level. My brothers were not crowded together. The rest seemed to be scattered along the next several hundred feet, not all immediately visible because of a turn in the cave. A few old cocoon men were interspersed with them.
"I see the lance," I announced,
which was wonderful. Now we could split into two parties and have both retain their capacity for accessing the plane. My voice echoed like there was a chorus of me all talking at the same time. Hitherto, Swan and I tried to speak softly. The echoes had been little more than ghostly whispers, although extremely busy even at that level.
"Keep it down," One Eye said. "What are you doing, little girl? You don't have any idea what you're dealing with here."
He had gotten past Swan somehow and was headed my way. He was awfully damn spry for a 200-year-old stroke victim. This business had him truly excited. That left me suspicious. But I had no time to try reasoning out what angle the man might have. I looked into another pair of eyes, these belonging to a long, bony, pallid man who had to be the sorcerer Long Shadow. Long Shadow was a prisoner of the company. He had been brought along because neither Croaker nor Lady trusted anyone else to guard him, and he could not be exterminated because the health of the Shadow Gate, insofar as they had known, was dependent upon his continued well-being. And well that they had been so distrustful. It would be a much different and more terrible world if the Shadow Master had been left behind to tinker at whatever wickedness took his fancy. Soulcatcher's evil was capricious and unfocused. Long Shadow's malice and insanity were deep and abiding. That insanity stared out of his eyes right then. On my mental checklist, I made a tick that meant this one would stay right where he was. Others might have plans for him, but they were not in charge. If we could work out how to strengthen our world Shadowgate, maybe we could even execute him. I continued moving, working my silent triage, constantly bemused because there were so many faces that I did not recognize. A lot of men who had enlisted while I was away from the center of the action. Oh, darn!
What?
One Eye was only a few steps behind me, gaining ground fast. His voice seemed to rattle as it echoed.
It's Weezer. The stasis didn't take for him.
One Eye grunted, evidently indifferent. Old Weezer came from the same tribe One Eye did, although Weezer was more than a century younger than the wizard. There had never been any affection between them.
He had a better run than he deserved.
Weezer had been old and dying of consumption when he joined the company during its passage southward decades ago. And he had continued to survive despite his infirmities, and despite all the trials the company had endured.
Here's Candles and Cletus. They're gone too. And a couple of Nuang Bo and two Shadar I don't recognize. Something happened here. This makes seven dead men all in a clump.
Don't move, little girl. Don't touch anything before I have a chance to look it over.
I froze. It was time to acknowledge his expertise. Chapter 85.
I haven't found them yet,
I snapped at Sara and the Radisha.
I don't want to go any farther if One Eye can't assure me that I'm not going to kill somebody just by being here.
Against all advice, those two had pushed as far forward as I would let them go. I could understand that they wanted to see their husbands and brothers and boyfriends, but they ought to have sense enough to restrain themselves until we knew what we could and could not do without risking harm to those very husbands and brothers and boyfriends. Sara gave me a sharp, hurt look. "Sorry," I said insincerely. "Come on, think. You can see that the stasis down here didn't work for everyone. Swan, how far up this tunnel do we have to go?" I could see a scatter of 8 recumbent forms between myself and the curve, none of whom were immediately recognizable as the captain, lady, Mergen, Ty Day, Cordy Mather, or Blade. From where we stand now, roughly 11 people still aren't accounted for.
"I don't remember," Swan grumped.
Bass echoes chased one another around the cavern. They were worse with my higher-pitched voice, though. "Memory spell wearing off?"
"I don't think so. This feels more like something I never knew. I'm still a whole lot confused about what went on down here."
One big problem was that none of us really knew exactly how many captured there were. Swan was the best witness because he had ridden with them, but he had not kept track, other than of key people. Mergen never had been any help, because after he had become one of the captured, he'd apparently become unable to explore the immediate vicinity where he was confined. "We need to get Mergen awake first thing. Nobody else will know all the names and faces." It seemed probable that some of the people I did not recognize just were not part of the company. "One Eye, figure out how to wake these people up. As soon as I find Mergen, I want to get him into talking condition. Can I go ahead?" Squabbling echoes reminded me to keep my voice down. Crabbily, One Eye responded,
"Yes. Just don't touch anybody. Or even anything that you don't recognize. And stop trying to rush me."
"Can you bring them out of stasis?"
"I don't know yet, do I? I've been too damned busy answering dumb questions. Leave me alone long enough, and I might figure it out, though."
Tempers were getting short and manners were becoming frayed. I sighed, rubbed my forehead and temples because I had begun to develop a headache, listened to the sounds of more people descending the stair. "Willow, see if you can keep those fools out of here till One Eye's ready." I looked ahead without eagerness. Not only did the cavern turn to the right, it steepened. The water-polished floor was covered with frost. The footing was going to be treacherous.
"Ah!"
The White Crow was up there somewhere. It had been announcing itself repeatedly, sounding more impatient every time. I moved forward, carefully. When I reached the steeper floor, I knelt and brushed the frost away to improve the footing. I told Sara and the Radisha, "If you have to follow me, you'd better be even more careful than I am." They insisted. They were careful. Not one of us slipped and went flailing back down the slope. "Here's Longo and Sparkle," I said. "And that wad definitely looks like the Howler." In fact, that wad definitely was that crippled little master sorcerer. He had been one of the lady's henchmen in the far north, then our enemy down here. He had become a prisoner of war along with his ally Long Shadow. And Lady must have foreseen some use for him, or she would not have kept him alive. But he was not likely to get released while I was in charge. In his way, he was crazier than Soulcatcher. The crow chided me for taking so long. The Howler was awake. His will was such that he could move his eyes, though nothing more was within his capacity. One glimpse of the madness within those dark orbs, and I knew that this man could not be permitted to make it back to the world. "Be very careful around this one," I said, "or he'll nail you as surely as Soulcatcher nailed Swan. One Eye, Howler is awake. He can move his eyes." One Eye repeated my warning absent-mindedly.
"Don't get too close to him."
The crow began to nag. Its voice gave birth to a particularly annoying generation of echoes.
Ah, Radisha. Here's your brother. And he seems to be in pretty good shape. No, don't touch.
That's probably what contaminated the stasis spells protecting the dead men. You'll just have to be patient, same as the rest of us. She made a sound like a low growl. The icy cave ceiling above us made creaking sounds that added to the volleys of echoes. I continued. It's hard. I know it's hard. But right now patience is the best tool we have for getting them out of here safely. Once I was sure she would restrain herself, I resumed inching forward. The white crow cawed impatiently. Out loud, I thought, I do believe I'll wring that thing's neck. The Radisha reminded me,
You'll build bad karma. You might come back as a crow or parrot in your next life.
One of the beauties of being Vedna is that you don't have a next life to worry about. And God, the all-powerful, the merciful, has no love at all for crows, except to use as plagues upon the unrighteous. Does anybody know if Master Santaraksita planned to come down here? My organizational skills had vanished because of my own eagerness to reach the captured. It occurred to me only now that the scholar's knowledge might prove especially useful here, if he could connect anything in this cave to known myth. I got no answer. I'll send for him if I have to. Ah, Sara. Here's your honey.
Don't touch!
I said that a little too loudly. The echoes got very boisterous. Several small icicles broke loose from the ceiling. They shattered with an almost metallic twinkle when they struck the floor. The crow spoke very distinctly.
Come here!
And I, having finally figured it out, told it,
If your manners don't improve dramatically, you might not get out of here at all.
The bird was strutting back and forth nervously in front of Croaker and Lady. Soulcatcher had left those two snuggled up together, arranged so that the captain had one arm around Lady's waist, while she held his other hand with both of hers in her lap. Additional delicate touches suggested that Soulcatcher's wicked sense of play had peaked for this bit of still life. If Catcher had left any booby traps at all, this was where they would be.
One Eye, I need help.
Any traps that existed were beyond me. Lady's eyes were open. There was no dust on them. She was angry. And the white crow wanted to tell me all about it. Patience, I counseled, close to becoming impatient myself. Swan, One Eye, come on up here. Swan arrived first, despite coming from farther away. I asked, You recall anything special she did with these two? Any little bit of sneakiness?
No, I wouldn't worry about it. By the time she laid them out, she was worried about what might happen next. That's the way she is. When she's starting something, it's her whole world, and she has no doubts about any part of it. But the closer she comes to getting finished, the more trouble she has keeping her confidence up.
Nice to know that she's human. I did not mean a word of that. One Eye, look for booby traps around here. And make up your mind. Tell me if you can bring these people back, darn it. My headache had not gotten any better. But, thank the God of Mercies, it had grown no worse. Another icicle fell.
I know, I heard you the first time you asked.
He grumbled something about wishing he knew a way to charm me up a better love life. I stared past Croaker and Lady. The cavern went on. Pale light barely illuminated it. There was no gold in that at all now. A touch of silver, a touch of gray, a lot of blue ice. In fact, the sedimentary rocks seemed to give way to actual ice now. ahead. Willow, did Ketcher go up there when you were here? He checked where I was looking.
No, but she could have during an earlier visit.
Someone had traveled in that direction recently in cavern scales of time. There were still clear tracks in the frost, and I suspected that I would not enjoy the journey once I began to follow them. But I would do so. I had no choice. I had failed elsewhere by letting Narion and the Daughter of Night get away. That Kina undoubtedly supplied them with a subtle boost did not sufficiently signify. I should have been better prepared. One Eye, talk to me. Can you resurrect these people or not?
If you'd stop barking for 5 minutes, I could probably figure that out.
Take your time, sweetness. It'll take us a while to starve. That ice up there must have been what Swan had meant when he mentioned ice on the plane. You've had all the fool-around time I'm willing to give you, I told One Eye. Can you do it, yes or no, right now?
The shape I'm in. I need more rest.
His speech was slow and slurred, and had taken on an odd rhythm that made following him difficult. He was right, of course. All of us needed rest. But we also needed to finish our business and get off the plane. Hunger was a reality already. It was not going to go away. I feared it might become a companion as intimate and dreaded as it had been during the siege of Jaekor. I had decided, already, that I would adopt Uncle Doge's suggested strategy. We would recover only a few people now. We would return for the others later. But that meant making cruel choices. Somebody would end up hating me no matter what I did. If I was really clever, I would find some good old-fashioned goblin-like way of spreading the blame all around me. Those tagged to wait could not hate everybody. And there went some good old-fashioned wishful thinking, Sleepy. We were talking about human beings. If there is any way to be contrary, unreasonable, and obnoxious, human beings are sure to find and pursue it. With verve and enthusiasm at whatever might be the most inconvenient time. Chapter 86. Is anybody at all still up topside? I demanded. I had settled down for a short nap when the timing had seemed appropriate, and that had turned into a long nap that might have become a permanent nap had not so many people been around to keep me from drifting too far away. I dreamed while I was out. I knew that, but I remembered none of it. The smell of Kina remained strong in my nostrils, so I knew where I must have gone, though. One Eye was seated beside me, apparently assisting me with my snoring. A worried goblin appeared, checking to make certain his best friend did not drift too far into sleep. Beyond me, Mother Goda had become engrossed in a protracted debate with the White Crow. That must have been a classic dialogue to disinterested listeners. Goblin murmured, "From now on, don't make any sudden movement, Sleepy. Always look around you. Always make sure that you're not going to damage any of our friends." I heard Tobo talking rapidly, softly, in a business-like voice. I could not distinguish his words. Somewhere Uncle Doge rattled away, too.
"What's happening?"
"We've started waking them up. It's not as complicated as we feared it might be, but it takes time and care. And the people we bring out aren't going to be any use to us after they waken. If you had any plans along those lines..." One Eye worked it all out before he collapsed.
The little wizard sounded grimmer suddenly. Collapsed? One Eye collapsed? Was it just exhaustion? I hoped.
"I don't know. I don't want to know. Yet. For now,
I'm just going to let him rest.
Right down on the edge of the stasis. Or even into it, if I think that's necessary. Once his body regains its strength, I'll bring him out and see how bad it really was.
He did not sound optimistic. I said, "If we had to, we could leave him here in stasis, till we could give him proper treatment." Which reminded me, "You're not just getting everyone up, are you? There's no way we can nurse and feed the whole crowd. Surely the captured would not be able to take care of themselves after 15 years of just sitting around, stasis or not. They might even be as weak and unskilled as babies and have to learn everything all over again."
"No, Sleepy. We're going to do 5 people. That's all."
Good. Hey, where the heck did the standard go? It was right over there. I'm the standard bearer. I have to keep track.
I had it moved over by the gap to the stair, so somebody going that way can take it upstairs. We quit fussing. That's Sara's specialty.
Speaking of Sara, Tobo, where do you think you're going? While I was talking with Goblin, the boy had slipped past and headed up the cave.
I was just gonna go see what's up there.
No. You're just gonna stay right here and help your uncle and Goblin take care of your father, the captain and the lieutenant. He gave me a black look. Despite everything, he still had those moments when he was just a boy. He put on a pouty face that made me grin. Willow Swan came up behind me.
"I've got a problem, Sleepy."
"Which would be?"
"I can't find Cordy Mather. Not anywhere."
From the corner of my eye, I noted that the Radisha had overheard. She rose slowly from a squat in front of her brother, looked our way. She said nothing nor did anything otherwise that might betray an interest. It was not common knowledge that she and Mather had enjoyed an intimate relationship. "You're sure?"
"I'm sure."
"You did bring him down here?"
"Absolutely."
I grunted. There was one other absentee whose non-presence I had been willing to ignore until some rational excuse for her disappearance arose. The shapeshifter, Lisa Bowalk, unable to shed the guise of a Black Panther, had gone up onto the plain as a prisoner, but was not now to be found among the dead above or the captured down below. Lisa Bowalk had been possessed of a towering hatred for the company, and particularly for One Eye, because it was One Eye's fault that she had become trapped in the feline shape. I had to ask, "What about the panther, Willow? It's not around here anywhere either."
"What panther?" "Oh, I remember. I don't know."
He was looking around like he thought he might spot his old friend Mather hiding behind a stalagmite.
"I remember we had to leave her upstairs because we couldn't get her cage around the first turn in the stair. I mean, it would have gone if Ketcher and I didn't have anything else to mess with. But we couldn't manage it, and the rest of the string both. So Ketcher decided to leave the cage up there for later. I don't know what happened when later came. I don't remember much of anything that happened after we came down here. Maybe One Eye should give me another dose of that memory spell."
He tugged on and twisted the ends of his hair, girl style, and stared down the slope.
"I know I left Cordy right down there, just a little above Blade, where it seemed like the floor would be more comfortable."
Right down there was the downhill edge of the clot of 7 dead men. There had to be a connection. "Goblin, what's the story? Are we going to wake these people up or not?" Me ignoring everything he had said earlier, Goblin responded with a sneer that turned into one of his big toad grins.
"I've already got Mergen out."
"But I wanted him down here where I could ask questions."
"I mean, I've got him out of stasis, bimbo brain. He's right over there. I'm working on the captain and lady now." Tobo and Doge have been doing prelims on Tai Day and the Prabindra Dra.
Exactly according to my expectations, with the latter two men included entirely for political reasons. Neither was likely to contribute much to the company's glory or survival. I moved down to where Mergen lay snoring. The echoing racket and the melting ice webs were the only changes I saw. I squatted. "Anybody think to bring blankets down?" I had not. I am what you would have to call disorganized when it comes to present-tense operations. It had not occurred to me to bring spare clothing or blankets or gear. But I sure can plan bloodshed and general mayhem real well. There were treasure chambers down here somewhere, though. I had glimpsed several in my dreams. There might be something useful there, if we could find them. My stomach growled. I was getting hungry. The rumble reminded me that it would not be long before our situation became desperate. Mergen's eyes opened. He tried to form an expression, a smile for Sara. But the effort was too much for him. His gaze shifted to me. A whisper struggled through his lips.
"The books get the daughter."
His eyes closed again. It was true. The captured were not going to jump up and dance tarantellas when they were liberated. Mergen's message was clear. The books of the dead were down here. Something had to be done before the Daughter of Night got another chance to begin copying them. And I had no doubt that she would manage that, despite Soulcatcher. She had Kina backing her up. "I'll take care of it." I did not have a ghost of a notion how I would manage that, though. Chapter 87. The rescue was running smoothly, like a well-greased siege engine missing only a few minor parts. Goblin had Mergen and Croker headed toward the surface aboard makeshift litters. Croker had not said a word, nor had he made any effort to do so. Even though he had been awake and aware, he stared at me for a long time. I had no idea what was going on inside his head. I just hoped he was sane. Before he departed, Mergen did give my hand a small squeeze. I hoped that was an expression of gratitude or encouragement. I was not at all happy about his being unable to provide information or advice. I had not thought much about what role I would play after the captured were awakened. I had operated on the unspoken assumption, more or less, that I would retire to my annals, or even farther, to the standard-bearer job, if Mergen wanted to be analyst again. More and more people kept coming downstairs, even though I had tried to send word up to warn everyone that they faced a horrible climb going in the other direction. The White Crow continued to curse and jabber semi-coherently, until it lost its voice. I was concerned about Lady. She had managed that feathery spy quite well for a long time, never giving herself away, even when she did try to clue me in. But now she seemed to be losing control of herself. I assured her repeatedly that she would go upstairs as soon as I had bearers capable of getting her there. Doge, Sara, and Goda had Tai Day ready to travel. I gave them the go-ahead. One Eye would follow him. Then Lady would go. The Prabindra Dra would be the last this time. Tobo seemed fascinated by his father, apparently because he could not quite believe that the man was real in a fleshy sense. Circumstances had kept his parents separate almost since his conception. The boy started to tag along after the rest of the family. I called out, "Tobo, stay down here. You have a job to do. See about your dad after we get Lady and the prince moved out." "Hello, Suvran. Why are you down here?"
"Curiosity. Sri sent a Rakshita's curiosity. He insisted that he had to see the caverns. He drove me crazy, reminding me how storied they are in religious legend. He couldn't be this close to something like that and not explore it personally.
I see.
I noticed the old librarian now. He was working his way up the line of old men, examining each and murmuring to himself. Occasionally, he would bounce up and down in excitement. Swan had gone back to make him keep his hands to himself. He wanted to finger and sniff every bit of ancient metal and cloth. He seemed to have trouble understanding that those old men were still alive but very vulnerable. "Swan, bring him up here." I did want the benefit of his expertise just a while ago. In a softer voice, I told Suvrin, "You're the one who's going to carry him back upstairs if he can't make it on his own. And I'll be right behind you, giving encouragement by poking you with a spear." Suvrin seemed to have thought about the climb already. He was not looking forward to it either.
"The man has no concept,"
I interrupted. "What about Shvetya?"
"He's back right side up and safely away from the pit. I can't say he seemed particularly grateful, though."
"He say or do something?"
"No, it was his expression. And that was probably because we dropped him on his nose once. I think I'd have trouble being grateful for a pop in the snoot myself."
Santaraxita was puffing when he joined us. He was excited.
"We're walking the actual roads of myth, Dorabi. I have begun begging the Lords of Light to let me live long enough to report my adventures to the Badralok."
"Who will call you a liar over and over again? Sri, you know the right people don't become involved in actual adventures. All of you, follow me now. We're going to have another actual adventure traveling into mythology." I headed on up the steepening slope. I soon discovered that someone had gone this way before me. At first, I suspected Tobo had gotten farther than I had thought. Then I decided that the disturbances in the frost were too old for that, so concluded that Soulcatcher must have gone back this way, just to see what she could see. Back there, small side caves entered the main cavern, few of them large enough to permit passage of an adult body. The main cave dwindled in diameter. We had to hunch down, then we had to crawl. Whoever had gone before us had done the same.
"Do you know what you're doing?" Swan asked. "Do you know where you're going?"
"Of course I do." Leadership tip. Sound confident even when you have no idea. Just do not make a habit of it. They will find you out. I had been through here in my dreams. But only sort of, evidently, because every few feet I ran into some detail I did not recall from those nightmares. And then we stumbled onto something that was far more than a mere detail. The sole of a boot nearly smacked me in the face because I was concentrating on trying to decipher the story encrypted in the frost on the cave floor. That was the story of someone who had been moving wildly, maybe in a panic. Not only had the frost been rubbed away in places, the stone itself was bruised or chipped. "I think I've found Mather, Willow." It was one of those odd moments when you discover the trivial. I noticed that Cordy Mather really needed to have his boots resoled. I did not immediately wonder how a man's leg could stick out like that, with the toe pointing halfway upward above horizontal, while the man himself was lying on his stomach. "We'd better stop right here and take a good look. I don't see the man doing this to himself." Swan said,
"I'll get Goblin. Don't do anything till he gets here."
"Don't sweat it. I'm fond of my hide. If I lose it, I'll miss out on our honeymoon." I drew my sword, for what good that might do, then raised up slowly till the top of my head bumped the cavern roof. Cordy Mather had crawled over a hump in the floor, and something fatal had happened to him before he could get all of himself onto the downward side. Suvrin eased up beside me. Inexplicably, I found myself painfully aware of him as a masculine presence. Luckily, He was even less interpersonally adept than I was. He failed to notice my flustered and uncomfortable reaction. Odd. The urge was not something I would pursue, certainly. I just wondered why I sometimes suffered these sudden, random impulses, some of which were extremely difficult to resist. 99% of the time, I did not so much as think about the possibility of combining myself, a man, and a bed in a search for adventure. Maybe I should not have been teasing Swan. Suvrin said,
"That sure doesn't look very appetizing. What do you think happened?"
I'm not even going to guess. I'm just going to sit here and wait for the expert to show up.
"May I look?"
Santaraxita asked. Suvrin scooted back. He discovered that the older man was too broad to pass by him there. So we all had to retreat 20 yards so Santaraxita could get past us, in turn. I admonished him repeatedly not to go farther forward than I had. "I definitely don't want to have to drag you out of here." Though I will grant that the man was a great deal leaner now than when I had worked for him. "And because you want to get home to tell the Badgerloke all about this."
"You were right about them, Doraby. They won't believe a word I say. And not only because they're the right people, but because Surendranath Santaraxita never had an adventure in his life. He never had the urge until this adventure had him."
"Rich men have dreams. Poor men die to make them come true."
"You persist in amazing me, Doraby. Who are you courting?"
VTC Ghosh. He was an acolyte of B.B. Mukherjee, one of the 6 Bomparan disciples of Sondel Ghosh, the Janaka. Santaraxita's face lit right up.
"Doraby, you are a marvel indeed. A wonder of wonders. The pupil begins to exceed the master. What was your source?" "I don't recall ever having read of a Ghosh or a Mukherjee featured in the Janaka school."
I snickered like a prankster kid. "That's because I was pulling your leg. I made it up, Sri." And that seemed to leave him even more amazed. Goblin broke it up.
"Swan says you found a dead man."
"Yes. It looks like Cordy Mather from this end. I didn't see his face, though. I wasn't going to move anything anywhere until we had a good idea what happened to him. I'd rather it didn't happen to me." Goblin grunted.
"Pudge man, you want to get down here so I can get past you? This tunnel gets pretty tight, don't it? Watch out you don't let your chubby butt plug it up. For how come you don't want to go slithering around back here anyway, Sleepy?"
"Because if I keep going this way far enough, I'll get to the place where the deceivers concealed the original books of the dead." Goblin gave me a funny look, but took my word for it. I talked to ghosts and mist machines. Birds talked to me. A talking bird was following me right now, at a distance. At the moment, it did not have much to say because its throat was sore. But it did manage to rip out a curse or two whenever it had to dodge somebody's flailing feet.
"That's interesting."
I thought so.
"Ah, yeah. It's not sorcery, though. It's your basic mechanical booby trap. Spring-loaded. Stabs you with a poisoned pin. There are probably 20 more between here and where you want to go. What do you think Mather was trying to do?"
If he woke up and found himself down here and didn't know where he was or what had happened to him, he might have panicked and taken off and just went in the wrong direction. I bet it's his fault all those guys back there are dead. He probably tried to wake them up. Goblin grunted again.
"There. That's disarmed. I'd better go ahead and see what else is waiting. But first, we need to get Mather pulled back so you all can get past him."
"If you can weasel past him, so can I."
"Yeah, you can. But what about your boyfriend and your sugar daddy? They've got a little more pork on them.
He grunted and cursed softly as he fought Mather's remains back over the hump in the floor. I noticed, for the first time, that the echoes were different in this more confined space, jammed with bodies. They were almost non-existent. Chapter 88. I do not believe it was miles to where the deceivers of antiquity concealed their treasures and relics. But my body believed that before we got there. Goblin disarmed another dozen traps and found several more that had fallen victim to time. The underground wind whimpered and whined as it rushed past us in the tight places. It sucked the warmth right out of me. But it did not dissuade me. I went where I wanted to go, and was hungry enough to eat a camel when I got there. It had been a long, long time since breakfast. I had a dread feeling it could be longer still before supper.
"It feels like a temple, doesn't it?"
Suvrin asked. He was less troubled than the rest of us, though raised nearer this place than anyone else. He was less intimate with the legends of the Dark Mother. He stopped staring at the three lecterns and the huge books they bore long enough to turn to me and whisper,
"Here."
He offered me a bit of crumbling flax cake from the pouch he wore at the small of his back. "You must have read my mind."
"You talk to yourself a lot. I don't think you realize you're doing it."
I did not. It was a bad habit that needed breaking right now.
"I heard you when you were crawling through the tunnel."
That had been a private discourse with my god. An internal dialogue, I had thought. The subject of food had come up. And here was food. So maybe the All-Merciful was on the job after all. "Thanks. Goblin, you feel any tricks or traps in here?" There were echoes again, though with a different timbre. We were inside a large chamber. The floor and walls were all ice that had been cut and polished by the flow of frigid water. I presumed the invisible ceiling was the same. The place did have a feel of the holy to it, even though that was the holiness of darkness.
"No traps that I can sense. I think they'd leave that sort of stuff outside, don't you?"
He sounded like he wanted to convince himself. "You're asking me to define the psychology of those who worship devils and rakshasas? Vedna priests would guarantee you that there's nothing so foul or evil as to be beyond the capacity of those most accursed of unbelievers. I thought they would guarantee it. If they had heard of the Stranglers, I had not heard of them